Tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about this corner of the world. The room you're sitting in, we call the training room. Some training sessions are on here in the summertime. It's our meeting room for right now. If you look in the center aisle, those that are you along that, there's some bolt holes through the tiles, and that was because the printing presses were here at one point. They were fastened to the floor there. But in a former life, this room was a car garage. It was a place where cars were fixed, as well as the bookstore was also had cars being fixed in it. This place has had some interesting, could tell you some interesting stories. And tonight we're going to hear from the Shanks. Myrna has prepared a presentation to be delivered by her daughter, Crystal. And they started here on this property with their family. It was Richard's vision, this thing of Christian Light Publications, and of course others that he shared it with. But this was their backyard, if you will, a garden, I think, here at one point. But Crystal can tell you more about that if she wishes. This is still their home. They still live in this building. So I was joking earlier that some of us feel like we live here sometimes. And I said something about the quirky building, but we do really enjoy it. We do enjoy working here. And we want to just tell you a little bit more about what happens here, some history, some vision. And then I will talk a little bit about the international work. I'm using some slides, places that Christian Light has gone. And Norwood will talk a little bit about, Norwood Schenck, will talk a little bit about the development, some of the milestones along the way, some recent developments. So, Crystal, if you're ready, you can come on up and we'll listen for the vision.
The people that asked my mother to have this part on the program knew her pretty well. They told her she didn't have to give it herself if she didn't want to, and she didn't. One slight correction to Wes's introduction. There have been various Shanks involved in the work here. Richard Schenck was at one point, but my father was Sanford Schenck. And this is about him. And my mother did write this, even though I'm giving it. Sanford's vision. Sanford grew up on a farm. One summer when he was a teenager, he injured his hand in a farming mishap. And being unable to do farm work for several weeks, he spent time reading. Normally, he did not particularly enjoy reading, but it gave him something to do when he could not be working. Unlike today, there were not a lot of books produced by Mennonites. And as Sanford read, he became convinced that there ought to be more worthwhile books for conservative Mennonites to read. Along with not being a skilled reader, Sanford was not an exceptional scholar. But he was serious about serving wherever the Lord wanted him to be, and he felt that he should prepare for work with children. Different from his family and closest friends, he decided to pursue a college degree at a local church college. As he sat in class after class preparing for elementary education, he observed the many teachings in popular elementary textbooks that were contrary to Christian faith. Sanford talked to his professor about the need for better texts. The professor said, however, there is no way a Christian publisher could compete with secular publishers in producing a quality school curriculum. The best alternative, he advised, is for Christian teachers to point out the erroneous teaching in secular textbooks. Sanford remained unconvinced. His convictions were expressed in an article some years later. It seems strange that so many people who would support and promote missions are apparently unconcerned when their own children are absorbing ideas that lead away from the truth. These children we have brought into the world can go with us into heaven if they choose the right way. If we want our children to be Christians, we must provide Christian training. Parents are ultimately responsible. They need to weigh carefully how their children are being influenced at school, 6 hours a day, 180 days a year. While we recognize the value of godly teachers, we dare not minimize the far-reaching influence of a sound school curriculum in shaping our children's destinies. Many respond to appeals for funds that will clothe and feed the cold and hungry, and rightly so. But if it is important to care for these bodies, which are intended to last only for a lifetime, isn't it more important to feed and clothe the souls which will last for eternity? We do not minimize the need for worldwide missions, but souls at home are no less important in God's sight than souls in foreign lands, and providing a sound nurture program at home is our first responsibility. Sanford also felt strongly that Psalm 1:1 applies to school studies. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. If the viewpoint of his teachers had any effect, it only deepened his convictions and enlarged his vision. He always came back to this conclusion: if God would be honored by sound educational material, couldn't he also make a way to accomplish it? After college, Sanford decided to go into printing, even though he knew nothing about printing. His vision for better material was still alive, and he felt that a printing facility would be a step toward making it possible. Several years went by. Parkview Press, his privately owned commercial printing business, grew. Because he had a printing facility, other people, including some church leaders, talked to him about the need for better materials of various types, especially material for Sunday schools. Sanford always listened, always agreed. Finally, in 1965, Sanford invited a group of 12 brethren, bishops, ministers, teachers, and writers, to discuss the needs and possibilities for Christian publishing. There were three such meetings. By the end of 1966, a limited amount of Sunday school helps were being produced under the direction of an already existing board, which published the quarterly Sword and Trumpet magazine. That board had been enlarged to include Sanford and some others who were present at the call meetings, and their publication had become a monthly in order to accommodate the addition of Sunday school helps. In addition, Sword and Trumpet offered for sale some chosen books from other publishers. A couple more years elapsed, during which time the Sword and Trumpet started to produce Sunday school quarterlies and children's take-home papers, in addition to providing teacher helps in their magazine. While some needs were being at least partially met, publication of doctrinal books, biographies, storybooks, tracts, school textbooks, Bible school curriculum, and more was not being considered. The Sword and Trumpet Board was sympathetic to the need, but did not feel that they could take on the responsibility for publishing other kinds of material. An organization specifically for that purpose seemed like the only way to meet those needs. About this time, a minister from another state told Sanford that through the sale of property, he would be interested in making a sizable donation toward the publishing of sound literature. After much prayer and discussion and seeking counsel, Christian Light Publications was incorporated in June 1969. After numerous communications with Internal Revenue Service, it was also granted tax-exempt status and was officially recognized as a nonprofit public foundation. This meant that people could count donations to the organization as tax-deductible gifts, and that was important. Publishing is expensive, and the finished products printed on a small scale of several thousand copies can seldom be sold at a price that recovers all the cost of development, production, storage, and distribution. Much would depend on donations. During the first several years, Just For You and various other tracts, as well as several biographical storybooks and one Bible commentary, were produced. A few older works were reprinted. Sword and Trumpet asked Christian Light to take over the Sunday school curriculum and the Sunday school take-home papers in 1972. All of these projects were worthwhile, but they weren't really what Sanford felt was most important. In his mind, the need for Christian textbooks, especially social studies, always came up as number one. He was pleased when a teacher writer became part of the CLP staff and was interested in working on a social studies text. In 1974, 5 years after the beginning of CLP, the first social studies text was printed. In 1976, a second one. And in 1980, a third. The books were well received. In 1973, Sanford began to hear about accelerated Christian education, an individualized educational program using smaller work texts and developed by another church group. By the mid-70s, Anabaptist schools were beginning to use that curriculum more and more. But Sanford had questions. ACE differed from Anabaptist theology on a number of significant points. What effect would that have on teachers who were being trained by that organization to use that curriculum, and on students who were being taught? Could an Anabaptist curriculum be developed using this same format? That seemed more feasible than a full curriculum of hardcover texts. Eventually, an agreement was made with Alpha Omega Publications that we could revise their basic curriculum, similar to ACE, for our own people. It would take much less work and money than producing everything from the ground up. When the Christian Light Board decided in November 1978 to move ahead, there was no turning back. The need was publicized for an estimated 100 workers and $600,000. If it were going to be presented to schools as a full curriculum, then a full curriculum needed to be available. Schools could not logically purchase just part of a curriculum, especially if they were starting a new program specifically designed to allow individual students to begin at the level where they were ready to work. When the needs were presented to CLP's constituency, the Lord worked out details. In August 1979, the newsletter stated that 90 to 100 people were working on curriculum development. Donations came, but not enough to finance the whole undertaking. While borrowing money was criticized by some, Sanford and the board felt that if God's people shared a vision for the need and wanted to invest money in this part of God's work, it was appropriate to make use of those available funds, even though they would need to be, and were, repaid in the future. By the fall of 1980, the curriculum was ready for use. The first full curriculum for grades 1 to 12 produced by Anabaptists. That was a major milestone, but in one sense was only a beginning. Almost from the start, we realized the need for a full curriculum entirely our own, not just a revision of someone else's work. Almost 40 years later, that is much more nearly a reality. Words cannot accurately convey all that was involved in developing a full curriculum, but undergirding it all was the solid conviction that it was not the work of one man or of many men. It was the Lord's work. Sanford thought it somewhat ironic that he, with his not more than average scholastic abilities, should be the one to get the work started. But he never wavered in his conviction that the Lord could work it out for his own glory. One part of his vision was that many more people with the same convictions would take the work farther. Possibly one way God brought that about, at least in part, was through Sanford's early death. Even though Sanford gave God the full credit for what he saw happening, I believe if he were here today, he would quote Jeremiah 33:3 with new meaning. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knewest not.
I appreciated hearing the overview of Sanford's vision and the sense that there's something to be carried on. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is simply, where is Christian Light today? We talked about it being for our children, or Crystal talked about it being for our children. And that's true, but it has gone beyond that. And so the question of where is it? Well, we know where it is, right? We're here in this building, right here in Harrisonburg. It's not hard to know where it is. And of course, that's in Virginia here in Harrisonburg. But another way to think about where Christian Light is where it's being used. I prefer to think about it that way. This morning, teachers and students in thousands of schools opened up textbooks and light units and began to study and discuss them. And homeschool parents gathered around their table wherever they studied and opened up their light units. And then maybe this evening there's some Sunday school teachers are studying their material, and children and parents might be on the couch reading a book. To me, that's where Christian Light is. That's where the real work is. And not just in these places in the United States. By the way, that map shows less than half of our customers because Google Maps maxed out at that point. And anyway, across the world, there's a lot of places that it's being used. This was not the original vision, but it's gone there. And by the way, has not been our objective to take it around the world. But that's what we'd like to talk a little bit about for a few minutes. Where is it? And if we'll start in the Pacific. So there's several places in the Pacific that it's being used. First of all, Papua New Guinea. This is a place that we had a call from. People were looking for a Christian curriculum. Today there are 82 schools and over 3,000 students in Papua New Guinea. There's a man there trained to use our teacher training materials to train the teachers. And so quite a bit of growth there, and we send curriculum there by the container load. This is the first training, one of the first trainings on the island, or a few islands there. The church that it was originally, the training took place in. The first training that they had there, they said there'd be 12 people. And when Elmer Glick showed up, there was 30-some. So they shared the light units, two and three people to a light unit, to get through the training materials that way. And later trainings grew further. Today there's an annual educators conference of over 100 teachers. Or this being the last year's conference, a summer conference, and the teachers gathered there. Just something that has grown significantly without any effort or objective from us. In the middle of the Pacific, or nearly in the middle, is the Marshall Islands. These are coral atolls, kind of ring islands, very small place, but there's a church there and a school, and they ask us to come and do some teacher training using a bit of our curriculum there. In far more volume, in Australia, in Gympie, Australia, is a warehouse and office. It's operated by Jason Kaufman. He distributes material there to over 100 families, 130-some families. We would send some curriculum direct from here, but again, sizable orders going there every year. And then we had some homeschool families in Malaysia that were using our curriculum. And Malaysia is an interesting country, very modern. Their tallest twin towers in the world are in Kuala Lumpur, the capital. And it's a Muslim-majority country, so a very different culture, a mix of the Malay people and Chinese. But it used to be a British colony, and the British people sent missionaries wherever there was colonies, and people came to know the Lord through those schools. And there was people there that said, the British are gone now, and the missionary schools with them, and there's no one proclaiming the gospel here. And so several homeschool moms, their husbands, started a school. They are in downtown Kuala Lumpur in storefronts, using three and four stories of a building to put this together from first through high school, running an amazing educational program that's very mission-oriented. They feed the children a meal, an emphasis on discipleship, and being able to bring the students, to pray with the students, to show them what walking with the Lord is like. And from that first one in Kuala Lumpur, there's now a school out in the country, a bit smaller group of students there that are using the Christian Light curriculum, taking our teacher training and so on. This is the first school. It's grown to over 40-some students that are in high school that we keep records for directly, and many more elementary students. So just a work that has grown an awful lot, and we just visited there a year ago, and we were very impressed with the quality of the motivation, the quality of the education, the quality of discipleship. People are coming, people that know nothing about the Lord, Muslim background people are coming to the church. It's a Lutheran group that's running the school. We were very blessed by the heart of these people. And then going to Europe, we probably have heard a good bit of Romania from Christian Aid's work. And this map is in a Christian Aid office in Romania. And there is not a possibility for Christian education. They cannot run public, cannot run Christian schools because of the laws. They would have to use state curriculum and so on, have to be college educated. And so the only loophole that these families know is to operate a home school, which is actually illegal. But if they enroll in a foreign school, the government looks past it. They don't notice it. They're happy if they're enrolled in some foreign system. And so they're enrolled in what we call Christian Light Academy. So out of Suceava, where Christian Aid has had a base for many years, we operate Christian Light Academy. They're technically enrolled here. Records are kept for these students, report cards and so on. So they've put up a new office for this work and translation work that they're doing. Stock our curriculum there. I think there's 4 pallets of curriculum that are on their way there at the moment, probably on a ship somewhere. So they keep a stock there and distribute that across Romania. Of course, they've also done a good bit of translation of our materials, Seed of Truth, and some articles there, and then quite a few books. It's the language that has the most of our material translated, 74 titles of books. There's other tracts and so on that would up that number a good bit. And then Ukraine, next to Romania, there is a similar situation where they don't have the option for Christian schools. Here they've elected to run schools. This would be the MIM mission. And so it's a mix of local and missionary families that are running schools there. And again, they're enrolled here, and that allows them to be legal and have a Christian education. Some people ask, well, what about the language? And we say in Romania, they're learning to speak English. Even if the parents don't know it, they're using our learning to read curriculum. That's working surprisingly well. In Ukraine and many of these countries, they're also using some local curriculum for their social studies and history. In another huge part of the world that speaks Russian, there's been some translation. Grace Press has done a good bit into Russian and other languages. And there's one textbook that has been translated. And there's a wish for a lot more. The kind of thing that's happening in Europe there, in Romania and Ukraine, they would also really like to have happen there. The stans, as I say, the Kazakhstan, all those former Russian countries, they would love to have a Christian curriculum. But they aren't quite as sold on the English language. We're kind of proud of our language, so are the Russians. And so they don't want a fully English curriculum. So if someone knows how to speak Russian, there would be many years of work available in translating some of the curriculum and being able to do a similar sort of thing. There's a huge field of need there. Church leaders are asking for this, wishing that they can do something for their people in a similar way, I think, that Sanford did many years ago. Should we help them? Can we help them? In Kenya, Eastern Africa, there's been missionaries there for years. There's churches, native churches. And there's children go off to school for many hours in a day. They go off to school, kind of a longer school day than we're used to here, and of course, in a secular sort of manner. And so they've started schools, and tried to start schools, but they were having a lot of trouble. There is a good bit of oversight, but just late last year, the Kenyan Curriculum Department, or the Kenyan Department of Education, approved our curriculum for use in the Engashuda school there. And so they're starting with that in this sizable school, and hope to be able to use that in other mission locations there. These are church schools with majority or completely native children using the Christian Light, beginning to use the Christian Light curriculum. In West Africa, in Ghana, there is an evangelical mission that has been using our curriculum. They've asked for teacher training, and here it's done, of course, in a warm climate under a bit of a roof. The palava roof, they call it. That's where the students would eat. They did the training there. A group of teachers that were trained and using mostly our lower grade curriculum. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, it's a huge country in the center of Africa. In Kinshasa, the capital, is a large church and a very large school. They are not using our curriculum, a very poor country, but they've asked for teacher training. We've been there a few times. If you need more details or a personal account of it, ask Chris. I think he's here somewhere with an usher tag. He was along. Jonas Souter was there. Different of CLE people have been there. And so there's over 300 teachers that were there for the training. We didn't use our typical light unit approach in the training because their teaching methods are different. They have a chalkboard and some slates and some paper, but not textbooks. They have over 4,000 students in one school. They have over 300 teachers, and they come in shifts. So some of them come in the morning, and some of them come in the afternoon. They have a huge building that the students assemble. I think it's daily, and so students filing into a large building. And they would also have a vocational school. I understand the caps that you're seeing there are nursing caps in a vocational training program. So this Ark of Moses, it's called, Ark of Moses. We don't usually say that, but anyway, whatever the meaning of the name might be, it's a large school in Democratic Republic of Congo that we've had connections with for a good while. In Grenada, coming back on this side of the main water, was another, Olive Branch Missions has been there for many years. They run three schools, about 30 students in each, and we've offered teacher training there for them. And recently they ran into a challenge with the government. The government was saying the teachers need to be educated. They need a college education to do what they're doing. And we're facing a threat in that sort of way. But we learned that the teacher training program, the teacher certificate, the government has accepted there as an alternative to a college education. 1 week versus a college education. We could talk about that, but they've accepted it. I understand that the raised gold seal was at least one detail they noticed that was significant to them. So anyway, there are some schools there, have been using our curriculum for a good many years, enjoying the light units and all. And of course, coming closer home, just north of us in Canada, maybe there's some from here, there's 107 schools that have purchased curriculum from us. These are a variety of Christian groups, a variety of mostly conservative groups. Of course, you can see in southern Ontario quite a cluster of interest there. And then we have several large Hutterite colonies, a variety of people that are using the curriculum in fairly large ways there. Our numbers of accounts are lower there, but often larger accounts, large schools that are using it there. And then nearly 2,000 homeschools. We have a homeschool an academic counselor that lives there. Frida works from Canada, has a part-time assistant to work with homeschools and our record-keeping program there. As I said, a variety of groups. One of the interesting ones is the Maccabees. They are, as I would see them, a little bit similar to the Bruderhof, not an Anabaptist group technically, but we share a lot of our values and not using much of our curriculum, but we go there for workshop tours. So just interesting groups that we have contact with there that would share a lot of our values. Going south to Mexico, there's again a variety of groups that are using it there, the Tarahumara Indians. I understand in, I'm not sure which city it is, they would come in from the mountains, a very poor people. They would work as servants in the city. Someone has started a school there for them. That's exclusively the native people there. The Kalani Gamindi groups would use the curriculum, large schools there, as well as other Russian Mennonite groups. I find the Russian Mennonite culture interesting. We have contact with them in Canada, and I heard a pastor there talking about the need that their group of people has. And he said, our young people today are coming to instruction class, are coming to the time that they're joining the church, and they're better educated than I was. They're better educated than they've been in years before. They understand the gospel. And he said, I think a major part of that has to do with Christian life and the way that we're using that in their schools and homeschools. And he said, I really care about our groups in Mexico. He said, in so many ways, they've lost their way. And so you see a lot of structure, a lot of patterns maybe, and quite a culture there, but maybe some of you know just Mexico Mennonite Aid and other groups that are reaching into Mennonite culture there. And he said it does him a lot of good to know that there's quality curriculum that can make a difference. And these are groups that are reaching out for help, wishing to maybe find their way again, find the meaning of the gospel. They need protection from the light of the sun there, but they need a little bit more light in some of those darker cultures, some places that are not doing very well, but reaching out for help. Also in Mexico, there's the Evangelical School Center, I'll say it in English, is translating our material into Spanish and into German. So most of our curriculum, they have nearly a full Spanish curriculum there, as well as translating some books and material into German, the two languages they're using there. So we go visit those. We'll be going next month to visit them again. And with some of the schools we'd be keeping records for here as well. Then just thinking about homeschools around the world. There's many people that we relate directly to with the record-keeping program. Again, this is a small portion of them, just kind of a representative sample. Would more than double if we had everyone, if we could get Google to take all the pins. But
many thousands of homeschools around the world that we're in contact with, so we're never quite sure who's going to be on the other line when we pick up the phone here. We might have a fairly heavy accent from a foreign country. And then homeschools across the United States, I find it interesting working with these. These are people that are seekers often. It's not unusual to get a story of the way that they've come to curriculum, people that have come to Mennonite churches because of the curriculum. Sometimes they're just people that want a higher academic standard. They have high values for their family. Sometimes we get the troubled children that are coming off the rails, if you will, in public school. They need a place to go. We have occasionally a rash of enrollments or people calling us from areas where there were school shootings, and they want to pull the children out of school. They want something different for them, and so they call us, get curriculum, sometimes enroll in our record keeping. So we relate to a lot of these people directly with Homeschool Plus and that program. And then, as we've heard, our primary vision is our schools, our Anabaptist schools, other Christian schools. And so there's a lot of effort, a lot of time that's put into that. We've mentioned teacher training, so we run teacher trainings in this room, and we run it in many different places across the states, and of course, as we heard, around the world. There's school representatives that go out and visit these schools, help them with curriculum issues or starting schools, people that are available to visit school anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And then record keeping, as we mentioned, a school can enroll, and then they would have an accredited high school diploma, something that is becoming more significant. If you wish to go on for further training in some service, you would need a diploma to go on for further training. And so it's been accredited by the National Association of Private Schools. That's a Christian organization, but just gives us a bit more credibility if a person is engaging further with the educational system. Another area that has been new for us is English as a second language. All we have to show for it at the moment was a good group of people that have been working hard. But this was started as a literacy program. So that's a person has moved to the States and they want to learn to speak English very, very well. So it's a fairly high level of learning English, kind of a variety of learning to read that you might have for a first grader here. Good bit of work's gone into that. But then, in addition to that, another area that we've started in and are further along with actually is a conversational English as a second language curriculum. Call it Talk It Out. And this has been used here, right in this building, in field testing and so on. But this would be also a good fit for a foreign situation where you're dealing with people who just want to learn to be able to speak the language rather than to read and to write it necessarily, but a very conversational kind of approach to that. And so this is a piece that can be used here and around the world, similar to school curriculum. I think as we look at the world, wherever you are in the world, there's a lot of the glory of the Lord. The earth is a beautiful place, right? The Word tells us about any of us are without excuse because of the way that nature teaches us about God. The glory of the Lord is everywhere. But what we wish for is something more than just the glory of there. We want people to know that it's the glory of the Lord. And what we'd like to see, what all of us would like to see, of course, and we get to be a small part of, is that the earth can be a bit more filled with that knowledge of the glory of the Lord, just like the waters cover the sea.
Okay, I think it's easy to see that God has blessed the ministry of Christian Life. And so the thing that's confronting us tonight, or we're facing tonight, is how are we going to use that blessing? How are we going to carry the vision of Sanford Shank into the future? It seems that God is with us. How are we going to do that? You know, I like an axiom or something, an adage that John Swartz credits Sanford Shank with. He said, it's not a question, can we do it? It's how are we going to do it? And I like to think that the people here at Christian Life still live by that. Because we still get confronted with the same question. How can a conservative publisher develop curriculum that can work in today's society and give our young people and children an education that helps them to function? We still face that, and yet we continue to take it in God's faith that we can and say, how are we going to do it? Not can we? So as we move to the future, and I want to look at just a few things that are going on in here. Sanford started with social studies, you heard that. And then we continue to work with social studies. The new one coming out this fall. And you also, how many of you started out with AOP in the 1980s? Light units. Then Sunrise. I really, personally, I came in here after Sunrise was started, but I think this is the turning point in our curriculum, was the development of Sunrise Edition that divides a course into lessons that homeschool moms can use, that beginning teachers can use, and even experienced teachers find it very useful, a good way to use or to teach in the classroom. So I think that in the 1990s, when we went to Sunrise, this was a turning point. And then in 2000s, we did the Sunrise Second Edition, which we're still working in. And this is just simply refining what was started in Sunrise. In math, light units, but we're expanding that. We're now doing textbooks and going into high school with our first textbook in high school, the Algebra 1, which is coming out this year also. Then science, actually we are starting some science things. In 1980, 1999, we did some Sunrise. And look at this chemistry book coming out in 2022, we hope. Who works at Christian Lake? On any day, it can be 60 to 80 people here. This is a picture taken last fall. They get so scattered around this convoluted building, you don't realize it. But there's a lot of people that work here. And what do? What happens here? You see teamwork. If you just come around, you see teamwork. Even us old people working with young people. Editors, typesetters, and occasionally getting some computer training along the way. Committee work. This committee here is fairly large. This was the ESL committee that Wesley talked about. And we pulled this group together last summer to get ESL rolling again. And we pulled people from Canada, Manitoba, Ontario, Alberta, Texas, and the Amish that are going into Mexico teaching English. We had some of those here. And so we had this big meeting last summer. Typically, a committee meeting is usually about 5 to 7 people, so this is a little bit oversized. But then there's also writing and editing, graphic design. Occasionally, they have a good time there. You'll notice our graphic designers. They're creative people. That's Darren and Clement there. So what else happens? Printing, bindery, and then warehousing, order processing, order pulling, and then shipping. And we ship annually 1.5 million pieces of material. So what does the future hold for Christian Light? How can we continue this? We are continually faced with that challenge. And time brings change, and things are changing. You saw some of the changes we had. And just recently, we made a decision to become Christian Light. And what this simply means is we are Christian Light. We still produce educational material. We still produce general publications. But to the public, we'll be known as Christian Light. And what we want to do is remove that confusion of, are we Christian Light Education or are we Christian Light Publications? We're trying to simplify. We are Christian Light. And along with that, a new logo. Now, when I show this to people, I get two responses. The older generation kind of gets apprehensive. What is the young people doing to this organization? Is this a sign that they're going to lose the vision? And then if you talk to the young people, they say, oh, that looks nice. Because one or the other, apprehension or it looks nice. But I want to ease your all's fears. This is not a sign that Christian Light is losing its mission to reach children and young people with good, solid curriculum. We are dedicated to being innovative in a way that's not cutting edge. We don't want to get caught up into the latest fads of education. Well, we want to be innovative so that we can continue to provide curriculum that does give children and young people that foundation they need in today's society and a worldview to carry it with. So we are not losing our vision. We're simply trying to better portray what we actually are now producing, a bona fide curriculum for young people. So as we move into the future, all of us here at Christian Light would covet your prayers, your support, that we can continue to send these materials out. Thank you.
I like what Norwood has to say about the need that we have for support and the need that we have for people to do it. It feels like a big task. I overheard one of the oldest men speaking here with one of the younger men today, and he was talking about the things that Norwood was talking about, that we need some younger people to have some new ideas and help us get done what we need to, whether it's dealing with the volume of goods that there's a demand for, and we struggle to keep up, and how to get that many boxes out the door in a certain amount of time, and all those kinds of things. We need some young energy, and we need some people to realize that we need that traditional kind of approach to what we want students to learn. We aren't looking for just the latest. So, good to hear Norwood say that again tonight. We look forward to seeing you in the morning.